Good morning, everybody. Hear me okay in the back? It's working? Yes? Okay. My name's Dave Fleischer. I'm a surgeon. I work at the McGill University Hospital Center in the Faculty of Medicine. I arrived at McGill, I think, in 1964 as an undergraduate. I looked forward to getting my 4 years done. At the end of my 4 years, I had a year of eligibility left to play McGill football, so I decided to do an extra year, looked around at the different graduate schools and decided medicine might be a good one. Played out my last year, was captured by medicine. I did my residency here, joined the faculty and as a beginner, and now I'm trying to figure out how to retire on a McGill pension. I've been involved in using technology for quite some time, and what I'm going to do is just go through some of my sort of perhaps capricious thoughts and ideas that I've collected over the years. And I'm going to try to look at the teacher, the technology, and the learner, and look at it from those different perspectives. If we look at some of the history of technology, I've put that clay tablet up there as the first item. It was a real innovation. You could capture the wisdom of your professors very nicely by having them write their thoughts down on these tablets. A little difficult to collect a large volume. Certainly when you get to the gigabyte level, it's hard to move them around. Hard to change what's written on them. You have to start all over and bake them in the sun until they're transportable. Moving on to the second image there, when we went from tablets to papyrus to paper, that was a huge innovation in technology. Allowed us to really mobilize and also made it much more distributable. The chalkboard, one of the most wonderful innovations ever devised for teaching. And I confess that even now, whenever I walk into a room to do a presentation like this, I always look around and feel comforted by the presence of a chalkboard. Because if the technology doesn't work, you can always pick up a piece of chalk and do your thing. I put this book, this anatomy book, up. I found this on a website called Old and Dusty Volumes. And books, I think, are terrific, but again, we all know the problem with the volume of keeping them up to date. They're mostly out of date by the time they're printed and distributed. But I like this one particularly because it's the one I used in first year medical school. It's an old and dusty volume as a collector's item now. And I think I still have mine in the garage somewhere. We moved on to 35 millimeter slides. Again, huge technological advance for us. A number of issues with the technology, very much like we suffer now. How many of you have actually used 35 millimeter slide projector in their classroom? You will remember that you have to put your slides in upside down and backwards. All right. So for you young people who haven't used it, it's not as easy as it looks. And the other thing is that you have to have your slides made. Somebody else makes them for you, and then if something new comes along, you have to have your slides remade. And it gets to be pretty expensive after a while. My first day as a lecturer in the Faculty of Medicine, I walked in with 180 kids in front of me, sitting there, paying attention to me. I had never lectured before, sat through a million lectures, sometimes awake. But I stood there and put my first slide up, talked about my introduction, and the light burned out on the projector. And there was an emergency number on the podium to phone for technical issues. In those days, we were not allowed to change the light bulb ourselves. We had to have a technician come. So 20 minutes later, you can imagine how I was feeling at that point. So there's been a lot of issues with technology. The overhead projector, it's a wonderful thing because you can do things in a very dynamic way. You can respond to your audience ad hoc. And then, of course, there's now the ubiquitous computer The tablet computers are wonderful because you can draw on them, you can have wireless distribution, but there's the same issue. If it doesn't work and you don't have the technicians around, what do you do? Well, there's an easy solution. Just ask your audience, because the kids all know how to do it. They'll fix it. The ubiquitous PowerPoint. It's wonderful because you don't have to take your slides back to the people to change them, and it's very quick and easy to do. Last-minute changes, no problem whatever. I put this slide in just for fun. I came across this when I was trying to do a little research for this talk. James Pillins, the principal of the old high school in Edinburgh, is credited with having devised the idea of a blackboard and colored chalk, which he used to teach geography. And I thought this was interesting because they're looking at it as such an innovation. And wrote here saying, but surely the time has passed for using chalk in a classroom. I don't think so, because it's my comfort when I have to do these talks. I still like to see the blackboard there. But don't forget, the chalk gets all over your hand. The piece of chalk breaks. You wipe your hands on your clothes. It's a mess. And there's chalk dust everywhere. Probably carcinogenic, but we won't worry about that. Now, if there's anybody from education here, you may want to put your fingers in your ears. You probably don't want to hear what I'm about to say. But we look at some of these ideas about what we need to do to teach effectively. So we look at ideas such as modeling, scaffolding, fading, conceptual frameworks, pedagogical constructs, cognitive apprenticeship. That's one I like. And I left this one last on purpose, social constructivism. So I have to really focus to say the word without stumbling over it, let alone understand what any of them actually mean. I think I can teach. I love to teach. I guess the objective evidence there is I've won quite a few teaching awards. I get tremendous feedback in terms of my evaluations from the students. So I think I can teach, but I don't understand any of this stuff. In the same idea, you don't really have to understand the technology to be able to use it effectively. You have to think about what your audience needs and how you can meet that need. So that then, by the student side, you have a need on the professor side. Now, this next slide I'm going to show you, if you're squeamish, you probably should close your eyes. So those of you who have your fingers in your ears, take your fingers out and close your eyes. At the beginning, you noticed my title said medical education. I left the medical in there because a lot of this stuff is going to be medical, obviously. Now, you notice I got everybody's attention when I said, if you're squeamish, you may not want to look at this. Was there anybody in the room who couldn't wait to see what it was? Now, let me explain what's happening here. Every spring, I work on the trauma service as one of the things that I do. And every spring, the motorcycles come out. And if you drive north on Victoria Street, just before you get into town in Mount Royal, there's an underpass. And there are big pillars on the underpass. And they were repairing those. So they had taken off the concrete, and there were three steel reinforcing beams sticking out like this. And our motorcyclist, who hadn't been on his motorcycle for a long time, was coming along at a good clip, ignored the construction signs, hit a concrete pylon. His motorcycle stopped immediately, and he kept going, rotated in the air, according to the construction guys, and hit that middle reinforcing bar. Okay? There's the reinforcing bar. What you see here is his belly button. So the reinforcing bar went in here, came out just beside his spine here. The responders, the firemen, cut the reinforcing bar off and brought him in on a spit, literally. So So here you see him in the operating room. Now, this patient is typical of the technology that I use to teach my residents. Just another form of technology, and how do I best use it? Well, it happened to be, as I said, it was the summer. It was getting towards the end of a year. Don't get sick in July. All the residents have just changed. So you have the most junior people now assuming more senior positions. If you want to get sick or hurt, get hurt in earlier in the spring. That's when they're really getting good before they move on to the next level. Okay? I happen to have a really good group around me. I've been teaching them for about a year and a half at this point. This is my hand here. All I did through this entire procedure was steady this bar. I just stood there and held it, and in the course of the operation made an occasional inane professorial remark. Key in trauma is not to be thinking about what the obvious injury is. What's the associated injury? What can you really damage? And how do you get your patient through this without doing any extra harm to them? So that's a process. I think that has something to do with apprenticeship, scaffolding, fading, but I'm not going any further than that with it. Okay? Now, you'll notice while I was explaining this, I was waving my hands around, making illustrations, explaining things. I have the utmost respect for people who can stand at the podium like this with no slides, no script. Bill Clinton can do it and keep his audience completely enraptured. I can't. I need some technology. I need some prompts and stuff. But when I start waving my arms around, it's probably time for me to think about sitting down and doing a slide or an illustration or an animation. So I like to see animated speakers, but are you really meeting your audience's needs? Are you showing things clearly? Now, the concept I was getting across to you is a relatively simple one, and it works. If it's more complex, it's a physiological or anatomical process, may not work so well if I'm drawing things in the air. You have to think about what you want to teach and use whatever technology meets that need. So if you can use a still image, use a still image. If you're talking about motion and interaction, you probably need an animation. Don't use an animation if you can use a still image. You'll notice my PowerPoint slides all just come up and the stuff is just there. There's no bells, there's no whistles, there's no stuff floating in from the sides and the top and the back and all the fancy stuff. If it doesn't have a purpose, then I try not to use it. And my last line again, and I apologize to the education folks, I really don't think you need to have scientifically proven pedagogical value to use a piece of technology. Very hard to prove a piece of technology actually adds to your students' experience. And in all of the computer-based stuff, most of the studies come out as good as or maybe slightly better than just standing in front of the class with a piece of chalk in your hand. Clearly, there are things that are better. Can't prove it, though. Now, a couple of things I want to point out about this old woodcut. First of all, it was drawn in 1910 in France. Distributed learning, electronic learning. Point out to you a number of other things. In 1910, they were predicting this is what it would look like in the year 2000. They're not far off. I think it's pretty good. What do we have here? Here's the old guy, curmudgeon, deciding what the curriculum's going to be, grinding it up, putting it into an electronic format. I sort of imagine this is one of the young gentlemen from the technical school who's learning a trade. And here we have the distribution system. Notice the audience is all male. If you're going to teach anybody, it has to be a male. But look, it's paperless. Wonderful things that we're still, some of these things that we're still trying to achieve. What's the reality of it? Well, here's a young gentleman sitting on the steps of the Arts building. I imagine it's Wednesday. He's just come out of his drunken stupor from the weekend, realized he's missed Monday's lecture, and on his little iPod or whatever it is, he's bringing up the slides of the Monday lecture he missed while he's listening to the professor give the lecture. And the only real difference between this and the previous slide, from my perspective, is the fact that he's actually wireless and can move around a little bit more. Now, contrast. If we look at the picture on the left, I spent a lot of time looking at this. It fascinated me. But you'll notice that the I guess it's the doctor down here at the podium is using this same technology that I use today. He's actually got a patient there in front of the entire class. He has a couple of assistants who are appropriately dressed to identify them as assistants. And I scoured this audience and found one woman sitting right back there at the very back of the room. And I imagine that they sort of said, well, you can come in if you sit at the back. This is a didactic lecture, obviously. If we look on the right-hand side of the screen, these are lessons we've learned primarily from the aviation industry. They put their pilots through the worst things you can ever imagine. And I did a little work with Canadian Aviation Electronics and got to go into some of the simulators that they have. And there were seasoned pilots coming out of some of those simulators, and I can tell you they were absolutely drenched in sweat. This is a real, real good exercise for them to go through. This plane that we saw land on the Hudson River, they did that successfully because that pilot had been through similar scenarios dozens of times and had incredible experience that he could never have gotten were it not for putting him in that simulated environment. Tremendous learning environment. So we're beginning now to do the same sort of thing in the medical world. This is a dummy here, very much like the technology this guy's using over here. And I can tell you, when you're trying to establish an airway in a trauma patient like the one I showed you earlier, and you get an airway obstruction, you really don't want to encounter that for the very first time on a real live patient when you're the senior person there. Having had the opportunity to go through that kind of a learning experience in a simulated environment is a tremendous opportunity to bring your skills up to a level where you can really apply them. You can sit in a didactic lecture and you can listen to the expert tell you exactly how to take care of an obstructed airway. Doing it's another story. This is why the kind of technology that we have now, where we're simulating these situations, is such a boon to both the teachers and to the learners. I went through one of these simulators myself, and when you've got an whole audience watching every move you make, your colleagues and your students, tell you, that's a lot more pressure than when you're doing it at 3 o'clock in the morning in the emergency room for real, believe it or not. And I can almost do it in my sleep. But to do it in front of an audience with everybody watching, I'll tell you, I was paying attention. And the next time I did it was even easier when I did it for real. So these are wonderful things. Very expensive, though. Very labor-intensive. And if you can do it with a lower level of technology, if you can achieve your aim with a lower level of technology, it's great. Now, I'm going to just pause for a minute and tell you that when we started to introduce these kinds of things in medical school, we used to hand out 8,000 pages of printed notes when the medical students walked in the door for their first year. And those printed notes lasted over the first 18 months of school. So what our team did was we took those notes, digitized the whole thing. You have to remember now, this was 11 and 12 years ago, so this was all innovative stuff. We put it all online, we made it available to the students, and a year later, we had 7 hits. putting text online has no advantage. What we then did was we augmented the text with a lot of illustrations and animations. And obviously, the usage went up exponentially, and even to the point now where the professors were no longer bringing their 35mm slides, but were in fact going online and using our online version to teach from. The difference, we used the technology to some advantage. You can't produce these kinds of illustrations and animations and run them from paper or from a blackboard. So we're using the technology in a way that brings some advantage to what we're doing. Now, I said I was going to talk a little bit about the teacher's side of it. What was the response of our faculty to having these things online? Now, Donna, is Donna here? I think she's around somewhere. Donna Rizzito was our editor. She had to work with the professors. She was the interface between the actual professors and the computer. Can you read that? Let me read it for you. This came from one of our senior faculty. Thanks, Donna. The mess on the web we'll fix later. As usual, students will only refer to the web if they have nothing to do for a moment here and there. They certainly never use it for any learning purposes. Lectures and labs are all that matter to them. Thanks for understanding. So this is an initial response to us actually putting this stuff on the web and making it available. So we worked hard at it. And the next one, and I'm just going to pull out a couple of comments from this one. There are a million, and I quote, "There are a million things wrong with the crap that will appear on the web, and I don't have any more time to waste on the web crap," with a whole bunch of exclamation marks. And the other comment I'd like to extract from that is, "I'm throwing everything you gave me into the blue box as of now. Please don't contact me again on this issue." I think this is what people refer to as faculty resistance. So I think not only do the learners have to be ready to embrace this kind of technology, our teachers need to be able to deal with it as well. They need to have a need for it. This little cartoon I thought was really quite cute. And to illustrate the comment that I just made, again, I'll read it. This young fellow over here is laughing, and he says, "Pierce just sent me the funniest text, and I guess Dad says, 'How do you know you didn't even look at your phone?' And he says, 'I don't have to. The nerve endings in my thumbs can decode the impulses of a text. Sort of an electronic braille.'" Okay, and then he points out rather nonchalantly that communication is expanding in all directions, Dad. And Dad thinks, "And yet?" And Mom, who's been trying to teach him something, "How many times do I have to tell you to pick up your shoes?" She's not using the right technology to get the message across. And what I thought was, well, if she really wanted to get him to hear that message, she could put the message into her cell phone and have her cell phone just repeat all night long and have it buzzing against her son. Maybe he'll pick up his shoes. Okay, I'm going to move off this for a moment, and I'll just quickly try and show you a couple of the examples of the things that I've been talking about. This particular illustration started as an overhead given by one of our orthopedic surgeons who was explaining about disc hernias, ruptures, prolapse, sciatica, these kinds of things. And it was a scribble, and I'm sorry that I don't have the before, but this was the after. So you can see it's really nice and clear and well labeled and illustrated. You have a good three-dimensional sense, but mostly you have a very good idea of the relationships of the bones, the nerves, and the spinal cord. I'll show you one before and after, I hope, if the technology works. I picked this particular picture. This was a drawing that came out of that original 8,000 pages of notes that we handed out. And I picked it not because it's a bad drawing. In fact, I think it's a beautifully done drawing. The labels are maybe a little bit small, but it's done exquisitely well, and it shows the components of a small blood vessel. What we did with it, nonetheless, is we turned it into this. What's the advantage? Well, in the image itself, perhaps the color helps a little bit with the three-dimensional stuff. But what we can do now is, as we're teaching, is take pieces of it off, add pieces to it, build it up as we're talking about it. And then if somebody asks a question, we can go back down to a different level. You can go back and forth this way. So there's an advantage to the technology. We're using the technology to help. I'll show you just a couple more, and as I'm scrolling through these things, you'll get an idea of some of the things that we've done. This one, this piece here, is actually taught in one section of the curriculum. This piece here, the histology part of it, is taught in another. So one of the things we did was we turned a lot of things into icons. We standardized things. In one lecture, the liver would be a circle called liver. Next lecture, it's a triangle. Somewhere else, it's a box. So we made an icon out of the liver, and it's the same everywhere. These are the little alveoli at the end of your bronchi when you're breathing. So in the lecture, if you click on this, it takes you to this. And if you click on this, it takes you back to this. So it kind of links the sections. It gives some continuity, even though they're taught at different times by different people in different locations. So there's another advantage in terms of using the technology. This is what we call a build. If you want your audience to focus on something, you can take most of it away, get them to pay attention to the piece you're interested in having them do. You go all around it, put it all back together again. Just a couple more. It takes 3 pages of text to describe the relative speed of electrical conduction through different parts of the heart. 3 pages of text and numbers and everything else. And even with the drawings that sit like this, it's very hard to get the ideas across. So if we animate it, you see here the electrical impulse develops slowly in the node, fires across the atria, gets trapped here in the AV node, and then fires rapidly down the bundles and out to the periphery. And on the side over here, you see the electrocardiographic outlines that you expect to see. And you can obviously repeat this over and over. You all now know exactly what we were trying to get across to the medical students by having them read 3 pages. It takes that long. And this is really all we wanted them to know, not all those detailed numbers. Unless you're going to become a cardiologist, you don't need them. You just need to have an understanding of this. One last one, and then I think maybe I've got a whole bunch more stuff to show you, but I'm going to be over time. Why am I wearing these? A number of you have them, I imagine. Why do, when people get older, need reading glasses? Well, here's the eye. There's a muscle here called the ciliary muscle. Here are some little fibers that hold your lens. This is the white part here. This piece is the lens. And what happens when you bring things closer? You see that the lens bunches up and gets thicker, and you need to change the refraction so that you can actually see things that are closer to you. And further away, that ciliary muscle relaxes, those little ligaments pull on the lens and flatten it out. So you get older, all that stuff gets a little bit stiffer, and this lens does not bunch up so much anymore. Okay? Now, that's a nice, easy way to explain all of this, but as a student, you can grab hold of this pencil, you can move it back and forth as many times as you want. I'm doing this myself right now, live, and see what the response is. So again, we're using the technology to some advantage. Now, I'm getting a message that I need to stop very quickly. I have lots more stuff to show you. So I think if you'd like to see some of it, you can come to our table. No? We can't. All right, call me. One last thing that I'm going to leave you with. I never teach my pupils. I only attempt to provide the condition in which they can learn. And I think that came from Albert Einstein. And I think it's a wise caveat to keep in mind when we're trying to design our teaching material. I'm going to stop with that. Thank you. My pleasure. Thank you.
Will you take your
question? Sure.
What are you using for that animation?
These are flash files, these particular ones. We have used Illustrator quite broadly and Flash and don't really need much more than that. It depends on how much of a fire I light underneath the Illustrator and how many projects they're working on at a given time. But to produce something like the eye that I showed you, it would probably be somewhere of a week to 10 days. We've created about 8,000 of these objects. And in fact, without realizing it, created such an incredibly valuable library that we've just licensed all of this to the American Association of Medical Colleges. And they're distributing it to all 124 medical schools now for people to incorporate into their teaching material. Oh, yeah. For you to sit down with the Illustrator, all you have to do is scribble a bunch of things on a piece of paper, explain it to them. Then you go on the web when they send you the email, you look at what they've done, you say, okay, change this, change that, add this, take away this. Of your time, it takes very little.
And do you load them?
They can be, yeah. You can do just about anything you want with them. Put them in PowerPoint, put them up as separate entities. You can incorporate them into bigger online lectures, so on. Sir?
If we're not in the faculty of medicine and doing our own preparation, and we wanted to do one of those animations, so the time isn't tell someone else what to do. It's the time to actually sit down and, assuming that we actually understood the software, and so we're in that learning curve, what would it be in hours to do something like that on one?
Yeah. I have spent God knows how many hundreds of hours understanding PowerPoint, being able to do this and to do that and to do something else. And I keep thinking, God, I'm working 10 to 14 hour days. Why am I doing this on top of everything else? My expertise is in surgery. I don't want it to be in PowerPoint. Get somebody else who's expert to do what they're expert at. It takes far less time, much more efficient. You end up with a much better product. Now, I'm using PowerPoint as an example. I mean, most of us can do the basics with PowerPoint. If you want to incorporate a Flash file into PowerPoint, you need a little more expertise. So do it. I keep telling myself, do what I'm good at doing and leave the rest to somebody else who's good at doing that. Because it can just consume you time-wise. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Anybody can use this stuff. 2077 is the local. Yeah. You'll reach Nancy, who's standing over there. It depends on the individual professor. Certainly when my students, when I was actually teaching an undergraduate course in biology, I did that. And they actually had to access it in order to figure out what it was they were supposed to do. But you can. I mean, it's dealer's choice on that one. There's a whole other layer then of security that's required. You know, is the student who's doing this actually who they said they were when they signed on? I mean, you all know about that stuff, but it does lend an extra level to actually getting stuff done. Well, thank you very much.